For an awful lot of his reign, instead of contemplating a close alliance with the Anglican Church, Charles II, oddly enough, toyed with the alternative of allying with the Protestant dissenters and indeed with the Catholics. Now, this was really not a good idea from a political point of view, because both minorities were really very small. Dissenters at this point made up perhaps 5% of the English population, and Catholics were even smaller still, 1%, really at best 2% of the English population. But nevertheless, despite the politically explosive potential of this idea, at least at first, Charles II's reign was quite harmonious. There was a naval war with the Dutch between 1665 and 1667, which was driven by commercial interests. This was actually the second so-called Anglo-Dutch War. There had been an earlier one between 1652 and 1654 during Cromwell's era, also for commercial reasons. But the second Anglo-Dutch War was a bit of an embarrassment, it has to be said. One of the battles cost the English 8,000 men lost, 20 ships and two admirals. And the gains from the war were seen as minimal, some obscure places called New York and New Jersey. But what is interesting is how Charles reacts to the criticism of the foreign policy. He's quick to sacrifice unpopular ministers. Clarendon, who's associated with this restrictive code, had become the focus of criticism, and Charles quickly gives him up. And there's an interesting contrast there, it seems to me, between his father's own actions in the early 1640s, where Charles I was unwilling to give up Stratford before it was too late. Unlike his father, Charles II was flexible. And this flexibility allowed for a lot of political harmony. Indeed, during 1670 and 1671, the parliamentary sessions were really particularly harmonious. People were falling all over themselves to praise the king and give him money. But relations between the crown and parliament would be soured in May of 1672 when Charles II suddenly announced a so-called Declaration of Indulgence. This declaration would have suspended the penal laws. That is to say, it would have allowed Roman Catholics to worship in their own homes. And it also offered licenses to Protestant dissenters to hold public worship. Resistance to this idea, to this declaration of indulgence, was really quite fierce in Parliament. Moreover, and I think more significantly, it also became clear that in the face of a common hatred and fear of Catholicism, English Anglicans and English Protestant dissenters could sink all their differences. The dissenters were not going to be allied with the hated papists against the Anglican establishment. Charles was astute enough to recognize the strength of the alliance against him, and he quickly withdrew the Declaration of Indulgence in 1673 and then gave his assent to a piece of legislation called the Test Act, which excluded all non-Anglicans from public office. It's called a Test Act because there was a test to see if you would swear an oath to the Anglican Church, and if you wouldn't, you couldn't have public office. Nevertheless, some important damage had been done, and public outrage mounted even further when it became known that Charles's brother James was, of all things, a Roman Catholic. This was particularly alarming because King Charles II, had no legitimate children. He had fathered at least 14 illegitimate children by his mistresses, but unfortunately he had no legitimate children. And the Catholicism of the heir apparent to the throne, James's Catholicism, was to become the prime political issue now in England for the next 15 years. Indeed, as early as January of 1674, a bill was drafted in Parliament to limit the power of future Catholic monarchs, and of course the fury of the political nation fell again on the Catholic minority. Recusants would be arrested on a scale not seen since the days of Cromwell. There is a sense, it seems to me, in which English anti-Catholicism is kind of odd in the later 17th century because it not only persists, but it actually gets stronger, really at all levels of society, paradoxically because at this time there were really very few Catholics in England at all. But in a sense, appearance mattered an awful lot more than reality. And by 1660, Englishmen had been subjected to over a century of Protestant propaganda that told them that Catholicism was evil, it was abhorrent, it was seditious, and it was associated with absolute monarchy and tyranny. Many English Protestants, therefore, were convinced that there were vast numbers of crypto-Catholics hiding, masquerading as good Protestants, only waiting for the right moment to come out into the open. And I think, although perhaps the comparison is a little inflammatory, this is rather reminiscent of the situation in Spain with the so-called crypto-Jews in the late 15th and early 16th century, where a bigoted majority is convinced that a hated religious minority is much stronger than it really is, and an awful lot of people pretending to be the right religion are really secretly the wrong one. Moreover, and at least in partial defense of the perceptions of English Protestants, during the 1670s, and especially during the 1680s, events on the continent of Europe, especially in France, seemed to confirm their fear of popery, as they called it.